Hello, guys, and welcome to today's episode of the Transparency Card podcast. I'm so excited to have you guys on today, and I'm even more excited to have my special guest on, who I will introduce you to in a second. If you guys aren't new and you listened to last week's episode where I talked all about love, you would know that I enlightened you guys a bit on my romantic relationship with my partner. I'm sorry, I'm kind of nervous. This is so weird. And so I felt like it would be fitting to have him on this week's episode.
Hello. I say my name?
I mean, that'd be nice, yeah.
My name's Sean.
So Sean is just making me feel so awkward right now. Like, he's just staring at the wall, not blinking, and I'm facing him, and this is just...
I'm just existing.
He's just existing. So we basically, at this point, live together. Who the fuck is that? He just always has bitches DMing him, and it's so rude, and he'll stop everything he's doing in the moment to just answer his side bitches.
I silenced it. It was a work thing.
Yeah, work thing, my ass.
I have a deal.
He has a whole trap phone.
There's a meeting every Wednesday at 3, and that was a 10-minute notification for the meeting at 3.
Oh, yeah. What kind of meeting?
It's the SIB leadership meeting.
Who the fuck is SIB?
Sunday in Brooklyn.
Oh, is that, like, where you work or something?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Now that we're done flirting, I thought it would be fun to have Sean on the podcast today because I've been meaning to talk about this topic for a minute, and I felt like he'd be the perfect person to discuss it with, which is how to do scary things, and more so how to take risks in life. I like to surround myself with people who I feel like I can grow with, who offer a different perspective and teach me things. And Sean, since we've started dating, since I've met him, I've learned so much about myself, and I've begun to just look at, like, life and the control that I have over everything that happens in my life in such a different way. I feel like before Sean came into my life, I definitely operated in, like, a fear-based sort of way. I just thought everything was outside of my control, and it was just my job to, like, find a way to cope with those things being outside of my control. But being with, I guess I should just talk to you. But being with you, I realized that I'm in a lot more control than I thought I was, and that anything I want out of life, I can have. And I didn't only learn that through, like, you just, like, teaching me those things and, like, giving me advice, but more so, like, just based off of your experience and things you've told me about your own life and risks that you've taken. And I find that to be really inspiring. So we're going to be talking about that today, like how to do scary things, how to take risks in your life that are going to help you grow and just become the person you want to be.
I've always kind of lived my life with the idea that, like, the day you stop growing and the day you stop improving is really the day you die.
Mm-hmm.
I say this a lot at work, and it's stagnation is death. Like, people at work a lot of the time will come up to me and they'll ask me, like, hey, like, why are you picking on me? Like, why are you, like, singling me out for doing this or doing that? And a lot of the time my response is, like, you know, if you're working under me, if you're, like, working at my restaurant, it's kind of my job to make you better. Like, if you came to my job and you worked there for 3 months, or if you worked there for 6 months, or if you worked there for a year, or whatever the time is, and if you left the same way you came in, it would be a failure on my part. Not only is that pushing the people around me, and the people around me pushing me, it's also, like, me pushing myself to grow and to learn. And when I, like, look around and I talk to people that I know, or when I, like, see other humans in the world, a lot of the times I see that they've kind of given up, and they've settled, and they've dug their own grave in a kind of scary way. Whether it be, like, in an occupation, or, like, if they're working a job, like, if they found a job that they're comfortable with and it's, like, enough for them and that's what they're going to do for the rest of their life until the day they die or until the day they get fired.
Mm-hmm.
That's always kind of been really scary to me. So I try to avoid that as much as I can. through a lot of different avenues.
So just to give you guys like a little background on Sean, he's the chef de cuisine at Sunday in Brooklyn, which is a popular restaurant in Williamsburg. He is in a managerial position, right? Like you kind of oversee almost everything. And what I find really interesting about Sean's story is that he actually started off, I don't know if this was your first job, but at one point you were working for your dad.
I was working with my dad and I was doing something that like I thought was okay. Mm-hmm. Like it was definitely paying the bills. It was fulfilling in the sense that it was like challenging and it required a lot of thought. And I had a lot of autonomy in the position, which was nice. But it wasn't something that I was like particularly passionate about. So like what I would do is I would use the money I was making from that job to like fund my actual passion, which was cooking. So like I would throw dinner parties for my friends and then I would eventually start selling tickets to these events that I would not make any money on. A lot of the time I would like put up an event and there would be 10 tickets available and I would sell 4. And then just so it wouldn't look like nobody was coming to the events, I would give 6 of the tickets away to my friends and lose money on the deal and like pay my friend to like let me use her kitchen and all that kind of stuff. But it was fine because, you know, it was what I wanted to do and it was what I was having fun doing. And like, even at the end when I was like, you know, selling events with like 40 tickets, 60 tickets, like all these bigger events, I still really wasn't, they were profitable, but not enough where like at a certain point taking 2 days off work or 3 days off work to prep an event, the money I was losing from going to work, it was nowhere close to what I was making with the events. It was just something that I did because I wanted to do. And then while I was doing those bigger events, I was also doing like pop-ups at breweries that were smaller scale where I was just like showing up and making burgers. And that money was like actually better, believe it or not, but it wasn't super consistent. But I was doing that while I was working and like to the point where I had to change my schedule to work around the events. Like I was starting to prioritize those slowly. And then there kind of just came this one day where like me and my dad had an argument and I was like, you know what, I'm taking next week off. I don't want to do this. I need like some time off. And then I just never came back. And there wasn't even really like a conversation. Like it wasn't even like a, hey, I'm not coming back anymore. I just like never, just never came back.
So what's funny is I met Sean's dad and he told me this story as well. And he's like, yeah, it broke my heart. And he's like, Sean was the best worker that I've ever had. And everyone always asks about him to this day. And first, I want to know your passion for cooking. Where did that like take off? When did you know that like this was something you loved? And like, what was the turning point? And when you realized like, I just would rather be doing this full time and I'm just going to take that risk.
Well, it was always something that I loved. A lot of it was kind of growing up in the household that I was in. My mom is an immigrant and cares about food a lot and cooks really well. Cooked really well for me when I was a kid. Some great food. Like, I had some friends that would, like, fight to come over to my house on Fridays and Saturday nights so they could taste some of my mom's food. And it was really good. I mean, just my mom was always kind of, like, ahead of the curve when it came to, like, food philosophy and, like, how she respected ingredients and, like, naturalistic, a lot of minimal cooking that kind of, that very much resonates with me today. Like, my mom was the kind of person where, you know, she would, like, make fun of my friends for eating hot dogs. She's like, yeah, look, they're eating all that, like, fake nonsense. Like, at home, we eat real food. You know, we eat, like, real vegetables. Like, we're not getting our stuff frozen and we're not getting our stuff out of a can. It's, like, real natural ingredients. And she would always say, like, you know, eat what God gives you. Don't eat anything else. You know what I mean? A lot of that echoes in my food philosophy today. And, like, even when I was young, I remember, like, I still have scars on my hands from when I was making waffles when I was 7. Because I kept burning myself on the toaster oven. And I would make little omelets when I was 10. I remember I would put a lot of black pepper in them because I liked them spicy.
That's cute.
Yeah. And then something, like, it kind of changed when I was, like, 15 or 16. I think then I kind of pivoted more towards into music because I just really appreciated making music and it was something that I could make for myself and by myself and like enjoy by myself. Whereas food was always more of like a social thing for me. It was always something that I like needed to share with other people. Whereas like, you know, I could sit in my room and just kind of like make a song for like 12 hours and I would be totally fine. I can't really like eat or cook for 12 hours straight because it's not exactly as economical. And yeah, I think like from 16 to 17 all the way to when I was like 19, 20, music kind of like dominated my life.
Yeah.
And then after that is when it kind of started shifting in the other direction. I don't remember if it was like a conscious pivot or not, but I remember looking at my position at a certain point and being like, okay, like I had tried to monetize music and I never really succeeded at it. So it was like, all right, cool. If I can't make money making music, I can make money making food. And then it was like, that's kind of when I pushed into it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Your dad was really upset when you ended up leaving. And I know, like, at least from my personal experience and just like most people that I talk to, like, I think everyone who has a relationship with their parents, your number one fear is disappointing them or hurting them or, like, you know, not doing enough for them. And I think it was really brave that you were able to just, like, take a step back, or you decided to really, like, listen, like, regardless of how you feel about this situation, like, I kind of know what I want to do with my life, or, like, I'm passionate about this and I want to pursue this. But, like, actually having the courage to, like, tell your dad that, or really just to, like, move away from the business entirely, I think that was really inspiring. So how did you feel, like, while doing it? Because I assume you had, like, a mix of emotions, or was it just very, like, black and white for you?
Yeah, I definitely felt bad leaving my dad alone, because it was the kind of thing where, like, even if I had, like, taken a day off, or if I had, like, because, like, Saturday was always our busiest day. Like, Saturday was the day where if you're going to work on Saturday, you're getting mm-hmm. your butt kicked. It's not a fun time. It's really busy. And when I was doing the pop-ups, I had started taking Saturdays off because that's when all the business was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I had, like, even at the pop-ups, I was, like, feeling guilty about not going into work to help on the busy days.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of guilt about just, like, you know, like, my dad's, like, you know, he's not an old guy, but he's, like, not as young as he used to be.
Yeah.
So it's, like, not being around to help him out was definitely something I was a little bit guilty about. But, like, the thing that kept echoing in the back of my head was, it's, like, you know, if I don't do this now, I'll never do it. And if I never do it, I'll regret it for the rest of my life.
That's very telling about, like, your life philosophy. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, obviously. But I feel like you and I are really similar in that way, where it's, like, we just don't want to regret anything in our lives. And, like, we want to live it to the fullest, because who knows how much time we have here. When you actually ended up fully leaving, did you just, like, dive into cooking? What was your experience?
Well, that part was actually really hard, because mm-hmm. after I had quit, it wasn't like I had a full-time job to go into.
Yeah.
Like, I was doing these pop-ups that I knew were temporary because they were pretty seasonal. You can only do them in the summer, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's, like, when things are busy. After that, it's not really profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So I had gone from working, you know, essentially 6-7 days a week, because the days I was off from work, I was usually doing the pop-ups, to working, like, 1 or 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very much the kind of person that when I don't have something to do every day, it's really easy for me to get depressed. Like, it's really easy for me to just, like, lay down and do nothing and lay in bed and, like, not mm-hmm. shower and not get a haircut.
I'm the same way, yeah.
Yeah. So that was very difficult just in of itself.
How long were you unemployed?
I want to say, like, 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was looking for something, and I kept, like, it's weird getting a job in the food industry unless you actually have experience. Like, not at least now it's different. Like, mm-hmm. now you could pretty much walk into a restaurant and they'll hire you right away.
Yeah.
But back then, if you didn't have cook experience, nobody really wanted to spend, like, give you the time of day. So I ended up working with my friend Alex, who owns Shea Alex, which is where I was doing a lot of the pop-ups in the past.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they kept being like, hey, like, I need somebody. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, I guess I'll just work at, like, a little cafe. And it was cute. And it was like, I knew the owner, and, like, we had a great relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think the time that I was there was fun because I got to change some of the recipes and, like, kind of, like, leave a little bit of my footprint on that place, which is nice. But the in-between time was really scary. And then especially, like, going from making pretty good money to, like, making minimum wage
mm-hmm.
wasn't the funnest thing in the world, or, like, even making less than that. Like, I remember there was 1 month that I had to, like, pay my rent on my credit card. And I think I only paid that off, like, a year and a half ago or a year ago. So mm-hmm. it's like, it took a while to, like, really, mm-hmm. get out of that little rut. And, like, the fear in the back of my head was, like, the biggest possible failure to me. Like, you know, it wasn't being homeless. It wasn't being broke. Like,
yeah.
The biggest possible fear was, like, having to go back to work with my dad. It was always, like, the scariest thing. It's, like, to me, like, that would have been the biggest failure. To, like, jump off this, like, cliff and to, like, go into the void and to only have to, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
crawl back. And, like, every time I would call my dad, he would be, like, you know, you can come back whenever you want. You can come back whenever you want. And I'd be, like, I know. Like, it would always, like, I know that option is there for me,
mm-hmm.
but the decision I made was to not have that safety net to, like, just to go into something a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your dad is proud of you now for making that decision?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he definitely seems like it. I mean, it's a funny story, but he called me the other day because I had gone to the yard to visit my dad, I think, a couple weeks ago. And I think I've only been there, like, 4 or 5 times since I left. Mm-hmm. But apparently this one customer who used to always come in, he was like, "Hey, like, what's going on? I haven't seen you in a while. Like, what's up?" Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh, yeah, like, I work at a restaurant now." And he's like, "Which restaurant? I want to come." Mm-hmm. So I told him, like, where I was working. And then he said apparently he had come and didn't even, like, tell me. Like, I had no idea he was there. Mm-hmm. And he, like, now every time he goes back, he, like, keeps telling my dad how good it was and all this thing, which is, like, which is pretty funny. Because I know my dad also really loves food, and he also always really loved restaurants. And he's been there a couple times. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, I think I'd say overall, yeah, he is. I mean, there's definitely still that level of disappointment. Like, I was definitely being, like, groomed to be, like, the next, like,
owner.
Person at his spot. But, yeah, I'd say he is.
I think at the end of the day, our parents just want us to be happy. Or, I can't speak for everyone, but I do think that, like, when it comes down to love, you just want that person
to be fulfilled.
To be fulfilled and to be happy in their life. And if your dad wasn't proud of you, I feel like it would say more about, like, himself than it would about you.
100%.
But, like, for people who don't have, like, this philosophy of, like, I don't want any regrets in life, or if there are people who do have that philosophy but are still afraid to take that risk and, like, take that bet on themselves, what advice would you give them?
Well, it's always, like, if you're not going to gamble on yourself, no one else is ever going to gamble on you. If you don't, like, push those chips in, no one's ever going to back you. And, like, whether that's, like, you know, a confidence thing or, like, just, like, you know, some sort of, like, universal truth, it's just you got to pay to play. You can either find out or you can die and never find out.
I think the title of this, or, like, the subtitle of this episode is going to be Stagnation or Death.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I had a friend who, like, really, like, encapsulated my philosophy really well, and she just told me that I was, like, a really, really happy nihilist. Nothing has any meaning, so it's like you can instill meaning into whatever you want. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. I remember the other day getting really excited about a rolled lasagna.
Yeah.
And I was like, this rolled lasagna is awesome. I can't wait about this lasagna. I'm so stoked on this lasagna. Mm-hmm. And then, like, telling that to, like, a human that, like, isn't in my, like, in my world, that they would be like, what? Yeah, but for me, like, that's what gets my rocks off. You know, like, I get excited about lasagna, and I get excited about, like, you know, mm-hmm. like, cuts of pork and, like, all this stuff. It gets me really excited. But it's also like, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, whatever gets you out of bed. And for me, some of the stuff is, like, really silly and fun, but also it's like my days are exciting, and I feel very fulfilled every day. And I really go home every day and every week being like, all right, cool. Like, mm-hmm. I earned my paycheck this week. I didn't, you know, I'm actually, like, making tracks. I feel like I'm changing things, whether they be small or large. And, like, and a lot of the times I feel like I'm actually, like, thankfully, because of the position that I'm in, I'm able to change some people's lives. Like, there's a lot of people who work under me who I, like, really feel have, like, learned a lot and have, like, really grown. There's a couple people that come to mind in particular, but, like, I had a manager come up to me once, and they were like, you realize that you changed that person's life. Like, they had never worked in a job before. This was their first job. Like, you've given them so much potential now. Like, they could probably be the next you in a different restaurant in a mm-hmm. couple of years. And I'm like, yeah, like, I know, it's crazy, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And as much as I gamble on myself, I like to also gamble on other people, but for the people who are worth it. A lot of the times it's like, you'll meet someone who you feel like has a lot of potential, and, like, they'll just, like, kind of, like, fizzle out and, like, disappoint in a lot of different ways. But, like, you need to have about 10 or 11 of those before you find one that's worth it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to feel like you're making an impact in the work that you're doing. I think I read an article once that talked about worker dissatisfaction, and most of the people they surveyed, they didn't even mention pay as a reason for them to be dissatisfied. People just want to feel like they're making a difference, and even though you're, like, a happy nihilist, you do find meaning and, like, fulfillment, like, in your job. And I think people need that. They, even if it's, like, even if you're working in an industry that you're not really passionate about, if you are being challenged every day and the work that you do is, like, making a difference, and you're actually being acknowledged for the work you're doing, I think you would be more satisfied at your job than doing something that doesn't challenge you or something that doesn't inspire you in any way. You know what I mean? Because it's, like, in jobs like HR, for example, like, it sounds really boring when you think about it. It's like, okay, like, I'm just, like, doing paperwork and I have to know all of these laws and, like, I have to, you know, hire people and stuff like that. But someone that I know who works in HR, they find that career to be very fulfilling for them because they're like, I get to make a difference in a person's life. Like, I get to give opportunities to people that may not have had these opportunities before. Like, I get to hire people and, like, create stability in their lives, or I get to create a team environment built on love and respect and grow a company. Like, I just think that whatever it is that you're doing, however you're spending most of your time, it should feel worthwhile to you and it should feel worth the sacrifice. I think being around you, for sure, like, I would definitely compare, and, like, not negatively, but I would compare myself to you and, like, your relationship with your work a lot, with, like, my relationship with my work. And, like, going back to, like, me just feeling more of an obligation to enjoy what I did or to be grateful for what I did because of the people that I worked with, versus you, of course, having, like, love and respect for the people that you work with, but you're there because you love your job and you love cooking. And I thought of it in that way, where it's, like, I'm inspired to go into work because I get to hang out with really cool people, but I'm not inspired to go into work because I feel like I'm making a difference in the world or what I'm doing has any real impact.
Well, I mean, just to, like, bounce off of that a little bit, I remember, I think I actually told you the story. I don't remember if I did or not, but I remember the last time I was at the Seaport, which is, like, we're doing a pop-up at the Seaport. So it's a lot of the same food that we put on the menu in Williamsburg, we now have at this location in Manhattan in the Financial District, or FIDI.
Yeah.
She doesn't like when I say fire die.
It's so corny. It sounds like something a fraternity guy was like, you going to fire die tonight? Like, yeah. That's the vibe.
But me and our corporate chef were kind of discussing some of what our other chefs were getting paid.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking about giving them a raise. And then he told me, he was like, hey, yeah, this puts a lot of them a lot closer to you. And you obviously do a lot more work than all of those guys.
Yeah.
So, like, we'll also take care of you as well. And I remember telling Paul, I was like, hey, like, you know why I'm here, and it's not for the money. He was like, yeah, I know. Like, I'm just there because for a number of reasons. Like, it's weird to say this now, but I feel like I have the kind of resume where I could probably work wherever I wanted, which is, like, pretty scary to say. Like, the reason I'm there is, A, because I genuinely feel like the restaurant I work at is probably one of the most challenging and unique restaurants that I've ever been a part of, or probably ever even, like, stepped into. Like, there's so many unique challenges. Like, that place is so entropic. Like, it's totally and constantly falling apart, and it's a lot of, like, juggling to keep it together and to get through the things that you need to get through. So that's a big part of why I'm there, because the genuine challenge. And the other part of why I'm there is really the people. Like, A, the people on top of me are, like, very supportive and very, like, they really bet on me hard. And I it paid off for them, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to, like, keep returning that favor. It feels very much like the powers that be over there very, very much value, like, loyalty and, like, sticking around and being with them. So it's like, I'm more than willing to keep that going.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, the people that work under me are, a lot of them are just, and I say this to everyone who kind of comes into work to, like, see if they want to work there. Like, every time there's a new hire, I say this every time. I'm like, hey, there's no assholes in this building.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who works here wants to be here. Everyone who works here is happy to be here. And, like, you know, it doesn't mean that it's all, like, peaches and cream. Like, you know, we're still coworkers, and there's drama pretty much in every group of humans ever. But the people who are there are genuinely striving to learn and grow. And that's more than you can ask for from a lot of other people.
Considering where you work now, and, like, we know that you love the industry that you're in and what you do, would you say that it's harder to work towards your goals than it is to, like, be complacent and work at a place that pays you well but doesn't fulfill you?
Yeah. Specifically about like Sunday specifically.
Sunday in Brooklyn.
Yeah, Sunday specifically is some of the highest highs and lowest lows I've ever felt.
In a career.
Ever. And regardless of career. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. when things are going great, you just feel like a superstar. And, like, you feel like, you know, mm-hmm. you can do anything and you can, like, there's nothing that you cannot do. But, like, every once in a while, there'll be these, like, these periods where it's, like, whether you're understaffed or, like, something is happening or, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. Where it's, like, holy crap, how am I pulling this off? How are things ever going to get better?
How do you get through those lows?
It's a good question. just kind of, like, for me, I do a lot of lists. Like, I make a lot of lists of what I need to do. And I have different lists for different things. Like, I have a list for big projects. Mm-hmm. I have a list of, like, small day-to-day projects. And sometimes there's, like, really just, like, I have a list of questions. It's like, hey, how do I do this? Mm-hmm. And a lot, and like I said, the cool thing about working there is, like, I have a lot of great people to ask those questions. Like, a lot of the people that I work with have, you know, a lot of the times you'll work in a spot. Or, like, regardless of industry, really, it's like you'll work somewhere where your boss hasn't really ever been in your position before. Mm-hmm. Like, I've worked at a lot of restaurants where, like, the restaurant owner was never there, never knew what the environment there was like, never knew what the work was like, and was just this, like, the term I like is corporate seagull. Mm-hmm. They just fly in out of nowhere, and they just shit everywhere, and then they just fly away, and you never see them again for a couple of months. But here, at least, all of ownership has worked in that restaurant mm-hmm. for, like, years.
Yeah.
They know the restaurant. They know what it's like. So it's like there's a lot of people to ask advice, to get advice from. And there's a lot of people who can show you things that worked for them. And a lot of the time, they'll even phrase it that way. They'll be like, hey, this worked for me, but, like, find out what works for you. Mm-hmm. But so it's a lot of trial and error, and it's a lot of, like, grinding. Because, like, every once in a while, you'll, like, walk into the place and you look around and you'll be like, holy crap, there's so many things for me to do. There's so many different projects I need to do. There's so many things that I want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, it's just asking for help. There's a lot of great people who work there, and it's all about just coming together as a team. I know I've definitely been guilty in the past of putting everything on my shoulders and just slowly chipping away at, like, a monumental task. But something I've been actively trying to get better at as of late is asking for help. It's just like sending an email to someone and being like, hey, I don't know how to fix this. I'd really like to fix it. I think this might work. What do you think? Like, can you support me on this? Can you help me on this?
For people that aren't necessarily seeing that success right now, so say, like, you are starting your own small business or you're finally taking a leap of faith and pursuing whatever it is that you want out of life. And I think, again, we always talk about this, how a lot of times people just want that immediate gratification. They want to see the results that they want as soon as they start putting in the work. And a lot of times that's not necessarily the case. Like how you were doing, like, pop-ups and events and you weren't really making money doing that. And I think it can be very easy to get discouraged or feel like, oh, did I make the wrong decision? Should I have waited? Should I even have bothered to pursue this? Like, am I good enough at this? What kept you going when things weren't ideal?
Well, it's, like, easy to say this in retrospect, but I kind of believe this about every facet of life, like, regardless of what you're doing, and I've felt it and seen it in a lot of different ways. I remember when I was first learning how to make music, my friend who had been making it for longer than I had kind of told me, he's like, hey, you're going to be really bad for a year, maybe 2 years, maybe even 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to send people your songs and ask them to listen to them, and, like, they're not even going to text you back. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how bad your stuff's going to be. And you kind of have to be prepared for that. Like, I say this a lot at work. I say this a lot in my life in general, is, like, whenever I'm showing someone something or, like, how to do something in particular, or, like, if I'll go up to a cook and I'll be like, hey, have you ever, like, cleaned fish before? Have you ever, like, done this before? They'll be like, no. I'm like, do you want to do it? And they're like, no. And I'll be like, why? And they're like, because I don't know how to do it. And it's like, my answer is always the same. The first step to being good is being bad. You'll never be good at anything unless you're bad at it first. And I know that regardless of what you want to do, there's definitely an element of luck. Like, if you want to, if you're trying to publish a book, like, you have to find that publisher that's going to believe in you. And a lot of that is just blind luck. But the reality is, every dog has his day. Everyone gets lucky eventually. as long as you never quit, you'll probably achieve some level of success. Like, as long as you keep doing it every day, as long as you keep investing time into it, because it really is an investment. Like, if you put $1,000 into an investment, if you, like invested in some property or, like, were buying a stock or something, and the day after you noticed, you looked at it, and you're like, you lost $100 and you sold it, you'd never get anywhere.
Yeah.
You kind of have to, like, you kind of have to assume that you're going to be a loser until you're a winner. Which is kind of, it's a scary prospect, but
it's worth it in the end.
It almost always is. I mean, I'm not going to tell you with 100% certainty that you're going to succeed no matter what you do. But if you don't quit, you'll probably get somewhere.
Success is subjective. So it's really about the vision that you have for yourself. And I think it's one of those things where you just have to continuously fail forward, because each failure is a lesson. And what do they say? Like, success is when preparation meets
opportunity.
Opportunity.
Yeah. It's even weird for me to sit here talking about success like I'm, like, a big successful person. Like, I don't feel like I've succeeded at...
And that's how most successful people feel.
Yeah.
And I think it's also because you have a genuine love for what you do. Like, I don't think you're ever going to get to a point in your career where you're like, I've made it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's always going to be more to learn and more to improve on. And that's just, like, life in its entirety. Like, you never stop learning, and I think life ends when you stop learning, or you stop having a willingness to learn. Stagnation is death.
The funny thing that happens a lot at work is people will find out how old I am, and they'll be like, you're only 27, 26, or only 25, like, how did you get here? And my answer is almost always the same. It's like, I'm a stupid fucking baby, I have no idea how I got here. I think as long as I continue to believe that I'm a stupid baby, I'll keep growing. This is only, tangentially related, but a lot of people will ask me if what I do is art, and I'll almost always say no. I don't think I'm an artist. I don't think what I do is art. I don't think it should be considered art, and I don't think I should think I'm an artist. And I think I've, like, in recent years, I've kind of come to the conclusion that the reason I won't let myself think that what I'm doing is art is because if I thought I was an artist, I think my food would be worse. Like, if I thought that my stuff was important, like, if I thought what I did was some sort of this, like, holy, like, because art really is kind of like a religious thing. Art's kind of like a holy thing, if you think about it. It's just, like, a lot of people kind of see it as, like, you know, this is, like, the reason that humans exist. If I thought that what I did was art, I genuinely think that I would be less curious, and I think I would probably try harder, and I think things would be less natural. You put more pressure on it,
and...
Yeah.
It wouldn't be as, like, fun, honestly, yeah. Overall.
A lot of the time, it's really easier for me to think of what I'm doing as it's just food.
Yeah.
People are just eating.
Simplifying it.
It's not something that someone is going to, like, look at and, like, take apart.
Yeah.
And, like, really analyze. Mm-hmm. 99% of the people who are going to be, like, really consuming it, or, like, literally consuming it, or, like, enjoying it, or, like, you know, coming and patronizing the restaurant, it's just a meal to them. It's nothing more than a meal. Like, yeah. For some people, it's something, like, they've been waiting for a long time and they're really looking forward to it. But the reality is, it's like, there's not very many things more humble than, like, you know, a meal, like food. Like, it's just bread. It's just a vegetable. It's just this. A lot of the times, the things that make it more special come from the person who's eating it anyway. Like, a lot of the times, it's like a memory, or it's a smell that they've smelled before, or it's like something that means a lot to them. And, like, I can try and impart the things that mean a lot to me into those dishes, or, like, into those ideas. But at the end of the day, it's just food. So I think genuinely I've developed that philosophy, not only to, like, humble myself, but to just kind of keep myself grounded in what I'm doing and to not take what I'm doing too seriously. Because I feel it a lot when I'm working on things, like, in the creative aspect, that I feel myself try too hard a lot. So a lot of the times it's about just taking it easy and not thinking about it too hard.
And that can be applied to so many different areas of our lives, and not putting too much pressure on yourself and, like, having fun with it. As, like, a perfectionist, it's very easy for me to, like, overthink things. And sometimes we overthink things to the point where we don't even allow ourselves to fuck up, as in we don't even try. And it's so important to fuck up and be comfortable with fucking up, so you can learn from that and just get better at whatever it is you're working on. And one day you might just get lucky and reach that success, or even more success than you ever could have imagined. Thank you so much, Sean, my boyfriend, my love. Don't high five me. We're in love. No, I'm kidding. thank you so much for being on the podcast today. As always, you're very smart and, what's the word? Illuminating.
Insightful.
Insightful.
He's inspiring.
All right, we're not sucking your dick on my podcast. All right, thank you so much. You guys should definitely go to Sean's restaurant Sunday in Brooklyn. The food is amazing. I'm not just saying that because he's my boyfriend. He actually can cook really well. The people there are wonderful. The ambiance is to die for, and you'll have such a wonderful time there. So it's in Williamsburg,
maybe? We also have a location in London.
In London.
And then we're doing a not very much of a pop-up, might be a permanent thing in the Seaport in the Financial District.
So go check it out. I will have Sunday in Brooklyn's Instagram link down below. Maybe Sean's, if you want to follow him and see how cute he is. Coming to a theater near you. But thank you guys so much for joining in on today's discussion. Feel free to subscribe, leave a rating and a review, join in on the conversation down below, and
we love you.
We love you, and we will talk next week. Bye.